Saturday morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Old History Podcast, part of the Old History Project, where the goal is to just talk about history. So, today I went out and spoke, well, Friday. You guys will get this in the morning, Saturday morning. But I went out and spoke with the Kiwanis Club of Morristown. They invited me out to speak and be the guest speaker for, you know, this month's topic in their group was history, and they have, I guess, a different theme every month. It went really good. I talked about Hamlin County history and the Lakeway history, you know, which I'm pretty proficient in the subject of what goes on around here. I liked it. It foreshadows a greater event that's coming up on June the 7th. So I would like to officially announce that I have been nominated to win a second award for what I do here on the Old History Project. So to each and every one of you guys that have helped me get to where I am today, it wouldn't have been possible without the viewer. So going to go back to the PBS. What was it, the old PBS show in the 2000s? Made possible by viewers like you. Anyway, I got 1,700 subscribers on YouTube, 5,100 likes on Facebook, and, well, I can't see how many people follow my stuff on Anchor, but I know I've got people from Germany. So, anyway, thanks to every single one of you. This is on June the 7th. I'll make an official announcement here on the Facebook page shortly. So stay tight. I will for sure live stream it. You know. All right, so other news. The project I have been working on has kind of slowed down just a wee bit. I've taken my research as far as I can take it. So now I've wrote it all down. I've typed up a huge Word document and compiled all the history of the subject in question, we'll say that. And just so that way I don't lose any of it or forget any of it. So I can't wait to tell you guys what's going on. It's so exciting. I'm so happy to be a part of it. But I better shut up before I spill the beans. Alright, so June the 4th is Statehood Day in Tennessee. I think the day Tennessee was made a state, I believe, June the 4th, 1796. So in honor of that, I would like for today's podcast to be about, well, the state of Franklin. So I'm reading this from an old video script that I had. So, well, bear with me. Let's get started. All right, so we've covered pretty extensively, you know, the early history of our region here, and I'm ignore the clicking of my mouse. So we've, you know, we talked about the early history, talked about the Revolution, you know, how the Revolution happened. But what we didn't talk about was how the Revolution affected everything else. Well, this is where the state of Franklin directly comes into play. So let's get started. So by the end of the Revolutionary War, North Carolina's land stretched to the Mississippi River. The state was so absurdly poor after the war that it could not afford to even support an army that was needed to support the settlements that were across the mountains. One of them was a struggling line of fortified stations, and the other was a larger, already established town, and they both were dealing with the constant threat of raids by the Native Americans. A lack of support from the government of North Carolina due to the remote locations of the settlements would be the direct cause of all of this. It basically laid the footwork for what would become Tennessee, and, you know, by 1796, it it basically set a precedent for everybody, even government politics. So basically, they were mad that they weren't getting any help, and rightfully so. They didn't. I don't know if they just didn't understand what was going on, or that they were just angry because they were getting raided all the time, people, dying and stuff like that. But nonetheless, back then, I don't really think there was a road that directly went from North Carolina to Watauga. So that was quite a hike. You gotta put yourself in their shoes for a minute. So in April of 1784, the state ceded its western lands that were known as the Cumberland River Valley to the federal government. Citizens were very justifiably concerned that Congress would sell the territory to Spain or France as a means of paying off some of the government's war debt. As a response to this worry, North Carolina took the territory back and tried to organize it as part of the state. And so this kind of goes into two different things here. This foreshadows something else later on. So North Carolina didn't really, they would be afraid that later on that the citizens over here would try to ally with Spain. They didn't want that. So anyway, let's continue here. In August of 1784, under the leadership of Arthur Campbell and a few others, the first meeting was held in Jonesboro, where the decision for the statehood of Frank Land was unanimous. While North Carolina legislature repealed the Act of Secession, and the Western statehood movement continued anyway. It was now an act of rebellion. On December 14, 1784, the Franklin Convention met, and the delegates adopted the North Carolina Constitution to serve as a temporary government, but made some alterations. The state would be named Frankland, but changed it to Franklin in honor of the founding father, who really didn't want anything to do with it after, even after John Sevier wrote him a letter seeking his support. So us rebellious bunch of fortified stations here would adopt what would enact a second convention, State of Franklin Convention, that would meet in 1785 in November to adopt a permanent constitution. This is often called the Holston Constitution. However, the temporary North Carolina Constitution would continue to serve the new state. At a third convention the following March, John Sevier would be elected its governor, eager to regain control over Franklin in order to validate land titles. North Carolina would go on and pursue a policy of encouraging dissension in the West through conciliatory overtures to the Franklinites, while simultaneously condemning the movement. And just a fun fact here, Franklin would only become within 6 votes of being the 14th state in the Union. And so we'll just to talk a little bit about the Holston Constitution. Of course, you had the Watauga Articles and all that. This would be the first attempt made by an American-born citizens to form their own government on this soil. And that is absolutely outstanding. And a few people actually consider Franklin to be its own they considered it to be its own independent nation because, well, North Carolina, well, they considered it to be an act of rebellion. So, what do you do? So, these overtures, as they were called, would make very little headway until August of 1786, when John Tipton came to be the leader of the anti-Franklin faction in Washington County. This would basically skyrocket the conflict between pro and anti-Franklin groups. It then became a personal feud between Sevier and Tipton. North Carolina saw its chance and capitalized on the dissension and undermined support for the Franklin movement by offering pardons and a remission for 2 years of back taxes. Strong opposition from Tipton produced a sharp decline in support for the Franklin movement everywhere, except in the area south of the French Broad River. There, the Franklin government's aggressive policy towards Cherokees attracted widespread support from settlers in, areas vulnerable to Indian attacks, native attacks. In June 1785, the Cherokee signed the Treaty of Dumplin Valley, which allowed settlement south of the French Broad River. This treaty would go on and become a very important piece of early Tennessee history. And let's take us a quick another break here, right quick. And just to go off on a little tangent about the Treaty of Dumplin Creek, Treaty of Dumplin Valley, whatever you call it, from wherever you're from. This is the most important historical event in the history of East Tennessee. It's up there at least in the top five. It is the only treaty that the state of Franklin signed. It was made and signed after several severe negotiations between John Sevier, Alexander Outlaw, and Daniel Kennedy. And several Cherokee chiefs were present there too. King of the Cherokee, as he's called, King of Chota, Abraham of Chilawi, and the Sturgeon of Tallahassee. So it basically, so after the State of Franklin was organized, I'm reading this from jefferson.tngenealogy.net, the legislature appointed John Sevier, Daniel Kennedy, and Colonel Alexander Outlaw as commissioners to treat with the Cherokee for more lands for homesteads. By prearrangement, the commission met with the King of the Cherokee. I'm not going to try to pronounce that name. The King of the Cherokee and some 30 warriors and some lesser chiefs met at the log house of Major Henry on Dumplin Creek, about 1 mile north of the French Broad. So by this one treaty alone, the areas that would go on to become Jefferson, Hamblin, Sevier, Knox, and Blount counties would now be open to homestead, and within 3 years, more than 1,000 pioneer families had moved in and established homes. And I'm sure you could, throw an arrow and you land on any one of them names. I'm pretty sure one of them would be none other than Colonel James Roddy or Alexander Outlaw. So North Carolina would refuse to recognize either this treaty or the state of Franklin. So anyway, let's get back to your regularly scheduled program. In November of 1785, the first Treaty of Hopewell was signed between the U.S. Representative Ben Hawkins and the Cherokee Native Americans. The treaty laid out a western boundary for American settlement and established a treaty line north of Greenville, which was the capital of Franklin. The two conflicting treaties soon produced open warfare between the Franklinites and the Cherokees. Franklinites interpreted the Hopewell Treaty as evidence of lack of congressional interest and opened negotiations with the Spanish authorities to the possibility of annexation. In February 1788, tensions between Sevier and Tipton turned the peaceful home of Colonel Tipton into a battleground for Franklin's independence. The resulting Battle of Franklin would end with three deaths and a number of injuries, and John Sevier's retreat. Soon after this skirmish with North Carolina's troops, the state of Franklin faced the prospect of an invasion from the Chickasaw, Chickamauga, and other Native American tribes. With no other friends to turn to, Governor Sevier would seek out assistance from Spain, from which I don't think either of them wanted anything to do with it. But the following year, in March 1788, the frontier settlements of Franklin were attacked by the Chickamauga, Cherokee, and Chickasaw. John Sevier, who was desperate to save his new state, sought out a loan from the Spanish government. He also enlisted the help of Dr. James White, who was later found to be a paying agent of Spain, attempting to place Franklin under Spanish rule. August of that same year, North Carolina opposed, you know, they rightfully so, they were opposed to any foreign body, you know, gaining control, had John Sevier arrested. And so this is where you get into the whole, they didn't want any new nation to have a foothold in the new nation right beside of them, you know. So North Carolina continued its policy of reconciliation and would allow John Sevier to be seated in the legislature as the representative from Greene County after he swore an oath of allegiance to the state of North Carolina. He would then be appointed Brigadier General of the militia for Washington County and in the settlements south of the French Broad River. Support for an independent state continued, and settlers organized themselves into an association known now as Lesser Franklin. Well, there would be no strong leader that emerged to replace Sevier, and that movement pretty much died off. So the rogue state, or, well, independent nation, as some historians call it, it only lasted 4 really short years in terms of history and how far we've came today. 10,000 families would be moved into Franklin, expanding it from 3 counties to 8, and they included people from Virginia, North Carolina, you know, all over the place, even as far as Pennsylvania. Franklin's counties included Sevier County, Blount County, and Greene County, which included modern Cott County. Caswell County was modern Jefferson and Hamlin County, and Spencer County was Hawkins County. Washington County was Washington County, but it included modern Unicoi County. There was Sullivan County and Wayne County, which included Johnson County and Carter County. And there would be a whole lot of very prominent people that would emerge out of this conflict alone. One of them, or actually I can name a few of them. Samuel Rankin. I'm getting my words confused. David Rankin, who built the Rankin House up in Greenville, is one of them. Colonel Alexander Outlaw. Colonel Joseph Hamilton Sr. Those two are of Hamlin County fame. Alexander Outlaw, to go off on him, he was on the Franklin Committee, and he was on the North Carolina Committee at the same time. Although he would go on to sign the Tennessee Constitution. He would be a prominent figure in making Tennessee a state. So, with all that, I'll give you guys a firm update on the award. I'll let you know when it's going to be. It's going to be June the 7th between 4 and 6 at the East Tennessee History Center in Knoxville. So, if you've made it this far, please consider, you know, subscribing to the podcast. You don't have to. I won't make you. But it's there if you'd like to support your favorite internet historian. So, hope you guys have a great weekend. I've got a 3-day weekend from work. Might go out and take some pictures. See y'all next time.